Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, you're hearing me over my phone right now because I had an internet situation, but don't worry, the body of the show sounds great through the internet. This little precursor part is just done under the umbrella of my phone. So do not worry. All right, in this first half of the show, we explore the fear gear. This is something I'm starting to really drill down on, and I think it'll be good information for you to share, especially with a family member who might be in that fear gear a little too often. Clay Aiken joins us, always an inspiration. First, BetterHelp. Struggling with anxiety? Oh yeah, a lot of people are struggling right now. Isolation or depression, right? You're not alone. BetterHelp online, licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, anxiety, relationships, sleep, anger, self-esteem, and more. I've always been in therapy, well, not always, but I've been in therapy pretty consistently, really my entire adult life, because I've always known that's the path to success. You want to have success in relationships, you want to have success in business, you get your head straight, and then you can go out and do anything you want. Simply fill out a questionnaire that assesses your needs. You get matched in under 24 hours. Easy to schedule, secure video or phone sessions. Plus, exchange unlimited messages. If for any reason you're unhappy with your counselor, request a new one at any time. No additional charge. Let's take care of yourself, people. Get some better help. Right, Dawson?
Adam Carolla Show listeners will get 10% off their first month with discount code Carolla. That's betterhelp.com/Carolla. Why not get help? Betterhelp.com/Carolla.
Podcast One presents. This is a collect call from Sing Sing.
My name is John J. Lennon. I'm locked up for selling drugs and committing murder. I'm also a contributor for Esquire magazine and the Marshall Project. So I'm a writer and I'm a prisoner. Imagine trying to stay focused and talk about issues of substance with geeks slamming, prisoners screaming, and PAs blaring in the background.
Get new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
From Adam's house and Gina's house and Brian's house, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Clay Aiken, with Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, Gypsy Potion Queen, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, we're going on mandate. Get it on. Must have had a lot of clients today. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
I'm Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, happy Cinco, yeah. All right, many thoughts, things to share. I was talking to Dr. Drew for a while, which always inspires some thought, and I had a couple things I kind of came up with, which is this. You know, the more you hear about this, and talking to Dr. Katz yesterday, it kind of struck me when he was saying an ambulance would, you know, pick up someone at a nursing home and take them to the emergency room. And I was like, oh yeah, I never really pictured, in my mind, it was always like healthy people in an ambulance going to the emergency room. That's, I don't know, an ambulance ride and the emergency room always feels in my mind like somebody got in a bad motorcycle accident.
Right.
Yeah. And someone's on vacation in Aruba and they're on a moped and they got into an accident. Now they're getting in an ambulance, you know. But I never really picture the nursing home to the hospital. Yeah. And Drew said, the only way you're transported from a nursing home is in an ambulance. And I kept thinking, yeah, all this death, but kind of without context is what's been really working on everybody, including myself. And I started kind of picturing, and also if we ever start getting into this, if one person dies and that's one person too many, then we don't really, we're not going to arrive at anything. We can't settle anything. We can't figure it out. But I was thinking about it earlier in the day. And I said, you know, if you were at the hospital with your husband or wife when your first child was born, and then when they were done with the birthing and the cutting of the umbilical cord and the swaddling and everything, now came the part where you and your wife or you and your husband had to go into the room and spin a giant wheel. And the giant wheel was a big kind of Price is Right kind of wheel. And on that wheel, it had the number 19, 52, and 87. And that would be the year your newborn would die.
Yeah.
I said, it's not like you would, if it spun it and it landed on 19, you would be devastated. If it landed on 52, you would be less devastated. And if it landed on 87, you'd be jumping up and down and hugging each other.
Right.
And if your wife was standing there with her arms folded and going, well, wait a minute, one death is one death too many. And 87 is 87, but it's still before 90. You'd literally be high-fiving every nurse running up and down the hall. I mean, how hard would you be pulling for 87 if you spun my mythical wheel? And when you die in a nursing home, that's kind of landing on that wheel. We all know people, all had friends, or, you know, the guys I went to high school with who bought it on motorcycle accidents at literally at 18 or 19. You know, we have that famously, Robert and Lenny, my two buddies, died at 19 in a car crash on the way to Cal State Northridge. Like, so if you picture that exercise of having the birth of your son or daughter, then walking to the next room and spinning that wheel, if you would be jumping up and down, if it got to 87, then we can't plan our society for the demise of the 87s, and we can't be as devastated as we react, because there is a difference between 19 and 87. So that was my morbid wheel of death. I also
a huge difference.
Well, I look, here's why, because
when the guy dies, you pee on his wallet.
There is no piece of the pie that says live for forever. There's only three. There's young, there's medium, and there's old. And that's all we have. That's all we have. That's all anyone listening has. That's all anyone who'll ever be born has. It's not a, you know, it's not a if, it's a when. But we want to stave off the when as far as humanly possible, obviously, or as long as humanly possible. But there is no fourth slot on that wheel that says immortality.
Singularity.
Right. So with that in mind, if you're jumping up and down and high-fiving at 87, then keep that in mind as we move forward with the pandemic. Also, I was saying to Drew as well, I'd also come up with this sort of concept, which is fear gear. We have a gear called fear, and we put it into the fear gear, but you don't want to use that fear gear that often.
Someone's been watching the trailer for the new Top Gun.
That's right.
I got a gear.
Fear.
What do you feel the need for? Fear. No.
No, no. Take two.
You feel the need for speed, and you're going to put the Russians in fear gear. So the fear gear, I realize that it's always there. And if you picture kind of a old stick shift car, you can find it, but you're not supposed to go into that gear that often. It's kind of reserved for when you're walking down the street and you hear something in the shrub and it could be a bear or something like that. Like, let's not shift it into the fear gear as often as we do. And I was thinking about, it's kind of funny, like when I was younger, trucks, back when trucks were manuals, some of them came with what they called a granny gear. Now, I don't know if any of Brian's S10s ever had the granny gear.
No, I learned to drive on a stick, but I don't know. I mean, no one ever called it the granny gear, so I don't know what that is.
That's your face.
The truck, a lot of trucks, maybe like I remember moving a guy's Ford F-150. It was up on a hill or something when I was working, you know, when I was 19 or something. There's first gear, and then there's a gear that's even lower than first gear. It's called granny gear.
Didn't know
and
about that.
The granny gear, so they call it, is not supposed to be used very often, and you don't need to use it very often. But if you got a trailer or you're parked on an incline with a full load of plywood in the back of your truck, you go even lower so you can get moving. But it's not the kind of thing you slide into that often under normal circumstances. So I was kind of thinking about the granny gear versus the fear gear. And it's
ironic like,
it's there. Right. It's there, but don't shift into it that often. And I think part of what we're seeing is people sit home and just watch the news and they watch the news and watch the news and they're sliding it into fear gear and spending long periods of time in fear gear. That fear gear is there. Use it on occasion, use it to get going or slow down or whatever it is, but don't stay in it for as long as we're staying in it.
You'll burn it out. You'll burn yourself out.
Well, and to your point about burning it out, when you're saying that, I'm thinking, am I in fear gear? Am I in granny gear? And I don't know what it is, but I don't know if I just passed granny gear and went right into like desensitized shutdown mode, because, you know, I'm dealing with the news all day and I hear it and I see it. And it's like, it doesn't look like anything to me anymore.
You're in neutral.
Well,
it doesn't even feel neutral. It feels absent or desensitized. It's not a great feeling either, you know?
Well, nothing's better than something negative, I guess. You have a sense of purpose, though. Like, you're working, you're moving. Like, you can't stew in your own juices very long.
That I could.
The purpose. When you have purpose, I mean, you know, devil makes work for idle hands, but man does it. Like, when you're just down.
Right.
You don't have a schedule anymore. It's, like, so easy just to slide in that weird fear abyss. I was thinking about it because I woke up this morning. I had an email, just one of those sort of mass emails from Adam Schiff, who's our representative out here. And the beginning of the email, and I've heard this a lot now, which is, I wrote it down here somewhere. It's this morbid milestone. Like, this is the new terminology. We're at this morbid milestone, you know. And the beginning of this was, I'll just have Dawson read the top two lines, because I thought this is gonna shift people, pardon the pun, into the fear gear. Oh, it's a grim milestone. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Grim milestone. Sorry. Go ahead, Dawson.
Adam, this week we reached yet another grim milestone in the coronavirus pandemic, as almost 70,000 Americans have died as a result of it. We can't allow ourselves to become numb to the terrible toll this virus is taking on our nation and the world.
Hold on. First off, is anyone not aware of this? Like, become numb to it. Why can't we become numb to it? You're fucking beating us over the head with it all fucking day. Yeah. You never stop. And also, last I checked, I don't know that you say we've reached another grim milestone of almost 70,000. Yeah. I feel like, call me when we get to 70,000, bitch. Wait for it. This is premature ejaculation of the milestones here. If we've almost reached it, then we haven't reached it. Call me at 70, even if I'm asleep, and then I'll wring my hands. God, we can't forget. Like, first off, everyone is doing everything. So why do we have to make ourselves miserable along the way? And I just thought, grim milestone, that's a new one. I've seen it in articles. I've seen it on TV shows. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a lot of grim milestone discussions, but here we are. And boy, are we in love with fear. God, oh, yeah. Do we love it, or we need it, or we're like crazed by it or something.
And we're in love with the new normal. This is the new normal.
Yes. Yeah. Grim milestones are part of the new normal.
Yeah.
On a happy note, Clay Aiken's going to join us, who's one of my just favorites. I'm just so impressed with that guy. And I also wasn't even aware that he's in my book. Now you can say, how come you don't know? Yeah, I don't know. I talk so goddamn much, I don't know what's in and what's out anymore. But Dawson grabbed a clip. It's just a minute long clip, I guess.
Yeah, this is part of your presidential predictors section. Here it goes.
Clay Aiken. He's already taken a stab at politics in his home state of North Carolina. Much like with Celebrity Apprentice and American Idol, he didn't win, but should have. He's an incredibly substantial person, as I learned in the few weeks I spent with him before I got booted off. You learn quickly from doing the Celebrity Apprentice who's got it and who doesn't. It's a little like the punt, pass, and kick competition. You can't be good at just one thing. They come in and throw you a task, and you have to decide who's the leader, which assignments fall on which people, all while keeping your cool. You have 48 hours to make a bunch of correct decisions under enormous pressure. Then you have to go into the boardroom and get reviewed. That's how all of life should operate, especially political leadership. You work hard and smart, and then you're held accountable. The ability to delegate, work under stress, rise to challenges, and take criticism are all good presidential qualities, and I'm telling you, Clay has them.
Wow. There you go.
It's ironic that you're talking about Clay for president.
I know. Clay for president. I was so impressed. Look, it's really, you know, the thing with the Celebrity Apprentice, like I walked out of that place. And I was like, Clay Aiken, that guy's a crackerjack. Lou Ferrigno, that guy's a puss. Like, that's what you learn from doing Celebrity Apprentice. And you would have no idea in a million years that Clay Aiken would be a stalwart stud and Lou would be a puss until you did Celebrity Apprentice.
You'd guess just the opposite.
I think you probably, if you had a picture of both of them with their shirt off. I don't know why we have to take a turn for the homoerotic, but I feel like if you played the original Hulk, that rules are rules, but you would have no idea that Lou was wired like Lou and Clay was wired like Clay.
No.
And yes.
Yeah, no, I'm curious because you both have had these incredibly, well, not to take a turn for the homoerotic, but intimate experiences with the president of the United States. I'm curious what Clay's thoughts are between the man that hosted the show and the man that's running the country.
Well, it's funny. I was looking down on his bio before we came on the air. And I did remember him saying it before, possibly on this show, where he says Trump has changed a lot. I don't feel he's changed a lot, but he's not a guy you don't really know him. So it'd be hard to say like you changed, you know, it's this sort of struck me as this kind of, I guess my number one Trump quality that people don't attribute to him that, but I would be impatient. Builders and developers are impatient people. And it's really something I've personally taken some stock of, which has been nice, which is
I need this wall yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, when I was at the height of my, when I was 35 and I was building a house, it was like, come on, come on, come on, what, come on. And then you'd get something where it'd be like, all it is one big setback and disappointment. Like the city says you got to hire a deputy inspector and that's about a 2-week process. And you're like, come on, come on. I mean, I hung famously my big mirrored closet doors the morning after my hernia surgery. Well, partly because I felt fine and partly because, I wanted to make some hay while the sun was shining. But if you really look at that act, it was impatience. I had ordered these big glass mirrors, big framed mirrors that were mirrors. Or, you know, if you ever go into a higher end mirror store, you can make a custom mirror for over your mantelpiece or your bedroom or whatever it is. Now there's, you know, go to IKEA and buy a mirror, and then there's go into the framing place. And the framing place, you pick out the trim, and then you tell them whether you want it beveled or whatever it is. And then you go, my mantelpiece is 6'3" across. I want it exactly as wide as the mantle, and we're going to put it above the whatever. And it's like, I don't know, it was like 5 weeks or something. And I was like going out of my mind, like, hurry, hurry, hurry. Where is it? And it, like I told you guys, it showed up. Of course, the day I went in to get hernia surgery, and when I was, I don't know, 30, God, let's see what I was. I was 36, 35 or 36. I just woke up that morning and go, the fucking mirrors are there. I'm hanging them. And that's because I was impatient.
Well, how much of it was, there's impatience, of course. How much of it was defiance to Dr. True, who said you would not be up and around the next day? I'm sure there's an element of that.
Like Brian, who had the audacity to keep living 10 years, 11
yeah.
years.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck that. Tumor.
I didn't, you know, it sounds like something I would do, but I didn't, it wasn't what was on my mind when I got up in the morning. I got up in the morning. I went to bed knowing that those things had been delivered to the house and they were just sort of leaning against the wall. I had the weird experience of, because of going under at 5 p.m. and the medication and all kinds, I had the weird timing experience of going to bed at like 9:30 or something, which I would go to bed at 2, you know? So then I woke up at 6:15, like sort of like, what day is it? Like, what's going on? And, first thing upon my head was those mirrors. And but it's an impatience, and it comes with developing things and building things. And it's not that good. It's not comfortable. I remember having this thought yesterday. I was waiting on some railings or some stairs or whatever, and it's like a 5-week wait or whatever. And I remember thinking, well, it'll show up when it shows up, and then I'll put it in. And then I kind of went like, that feels better. Because I was constantly like, come on, go. And that's what Trump felt like to me, felt impatient all the time. And that was,
wonder if Clay picked that up.
That'll be interesting to talk to him about it. But I didn't notice a big transition or transformation from this Trump to that Trump. And also, I think part of being impatient is not being a very good listener. Because you go like, yeah. Okay. All right. Here we go. Yeah. Right.
Well, it's been pretty widely reported for years that like the Trump's aides have had to resort to doing like almost like flashcards, like put everything on one, you know, don't give him detailed reports. He's not going to read them. Put them on one piece of paper, you know, with graphics or whatever, because he's got, you know, he's, like you said, that would make sense. He's impatient.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I'm very beat oriented. Like, don't give me the big Bible and verse of everything. Right. Just give me the beats. I'll tell you. You tell me. I'll remember it. Say it to me. Don't have me read it. Like, it's a quick beat. I'll ingest it. And yes, and it often rubs people the wrong way because like. Matt'll get on the phone with me, Matt the Porcelain Punisher Fondelier, and he'll say something like, I talked to Barry and they're gonna reschedule for next year, and I'll go, next, okay, next, and he'll wanna finish what he's saying, you know,
yeah,
like he'll
nerve.
Go Barry was very apologetic. I'll just go, next, what's next? And it's kind of rude. But it's not really meant to be rude. I don't want to talk about Barry and he felt really bad. Like, I don't need that part of the story. I just need the part where it's rescheduled.
You got it.
And it's next. Yeah. And it's also a little of, that's not going to work that good at the dinner table. I feel like during the work week, when it's with your assistant, maybe you can get away with it.
You'd be a great priest in a confessional. Next. Don't care. Not a big deal. Out. Stop wasting my time. Quote unquote sins.
Yeah. And then it'd be like, yeah, it'd be like, I mean, yeah, it'd be like this. So here, Brian.
Yeah.
You be the young boy. Oh, not sure. The young boy. I'll make you
the confessor.
Let's make you the confessor, but let's make you 19.
Okay.
And let's have you explain to me that you used the Lord's name in vain a couple of times, that you did not honor your father and didn't honor your mother, a few of those. And then at some point, let's talk about having impure sex
impure
with
thoughts.
Your hot girlfriend. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, right. No, sex with the girlfriend.
Right, okay, okay. Forgive me,
my
father.
Son. How long's it been now?
It's been, oh my gosh, at least a month is my last.
Yeah, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Okay. Forgive me, Father, for
I have sinned. Right. Yeah.
Sinned. I've defied my parents. I did not listen.
That happens to the best of us. Five Hail Marys. What else?
Okay. I took the Lord's name in vain multiple occasions.
Yeah, yeah. The Bible's not really clear on that. I think it's misinterpreted. Anyway, yeah, good. We're good.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
do a Hail Mary. Do like two Hail Marys for that one or something.
Okay. This is great. Very efficient. This is a big one. I have had lustful thoughts. In fact, sex out of marriage with my girlfriend.
Tammy, is that her? Sorry, in the rectory.
Well, this is supposed to be anonymous, right?
Ooh.
You're not supposed to technically really know who I
got eyeballs. Anyway.
I mean,
what'd
yes, Tam. Yes,
what'd you do
Tam.
With her? What'd you have, oral? Well,
yeah, a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, then, all right, slow it down. Slow it down.
Oh, okay. Some
well, let me check
the shirt stuff and
check my wristband here. I think there's a difference between you performing on her, because that's only going to get you a couple of Hail Marys. But then there's her performing on you.
Oh, so there's different scales. Okay, well then, she performed on me, I guess, a couple of times.
Hold on, there's that guy wants to get into. Hey, wait your turn. I don't care. However long it takes. That's how long.
Occupied.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's not going to take very long, apparently. And then some finger stuff. I don't want to get too graphic.
That's all right. I've been around the block a few times. I remember what it's like to be young.
Don't you?
Speaking of the fingers.
Don't you have to take a vow of celibacy?
Hold the fingers up to the screen. Let me get a whiff.
My finger? The fingers I used on her?
Well, I'm just saying, if you want to really, explore this sin, you can't just do it through audibly.
All right. Well, here you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a sin. Yeah. Anyway, slow down. Where were we?
I've just described to you the things that I was confessing, the sexual acts. And
yeah.
This is making me very uncomfortable, Father. This is making me very uncomfortable.
She performed on you, though, huh?
Yeah, a couple of times. Yeah.
Hold on a second. I know I got another guy in here. You use the Lord's name in vain. You did three Hail Marys. Wait, fucking check the chart, would you?
Are you doing another confession at the same time? Is there someone on the other side of your booth?
You know, when you're at the hardware store and the guy's looking for a part behind the counter, and then the phone rings and he kind of tells the guy, like, hold on, or just come in, or that's a 3/8 coupler. That's kind of what I just did there. But with
God. Okay. Well, it's very efficient then, I guess.
Occupied.
Yes, yep. It's occupied. Please. Sorry. No, what was that? She was
very
going
busy parishioners you have.
She was going. All right, end scene. I don't even know what got us there.
In a hurry. Impatience.
Yeah. Yeah, no patience. That's what I got. Everyone would get into the boardroom. Everyone would be everywhere. And then at the very last second, he would just blow in and get sort of caught up and then just blow through it, then just blow out of there again.
Do you think the kids were like that, or were they compensating the other way? Like, get everything ready for him, or, because Ivanka seems very still. Like, she doesn't blow it out.
I found her remarkably composed.
Right.
I thought she was, like, very well put together. She kind of reminded me of in the beginning of Heart to Heart when
I thought you were going to say
Max the butler. If you can find the beginning of Heart to Heart, he's like, that's Mr. Hart. He's a millionaire. And then he's like, that's, and then they show like Stephanie Powers. I think that's Mrs. Hart. She's beautiful. Like he was like, and she's driving her convertible Mercedes and kicking ass. And I remember like when I was 12, I was like, God damn, look at that chick. Good looking, put together, throwing kicks. Like she's that. So she's like Mrs. Hart, I think is how you, I would describe her. The sons, let's see, Donald and
Eric,
they were just kind of pretty good, but kind of finding their way a little bit, like a little bit younger or something. Didn't strike me as quite as gifted, but she really struck me as well put together. Maybe even better than Mrs. Hart.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. Do we have the beginning of that, Max or Fata?
Yeah.
It's such a crazy era to be watching TV, especially you have to picture all of this through the lens of Adam Carolla, who's sitting in his 100-year-old shack in North Hollywood on his dad, on his stepdad's like pull out sofa bed, watching a black and white TV in what is the den and my stepfather's bedroom simultaneously with our, you know, no air, one bedroom house, and my mom in the next room with her roots all grown out gray and like a stripe of weird dyed red hair put on her and yelling freak out. This is what I was watching on TV.
Now that's a grim milestone.
Yes. Private jet.
This is my boss, Jonathan Hart, a self-made millionaire. He's quite a guy. This is Mrs. H. She's gorgeous. She's one lady who knows how to take care of herself.
Yeah. All right.
By the way, my name is Max.
Someone I get a picture of my mom and just slug it in there. Ooh. She's gorgeous.
Mrs. H.
She's one lady who knows how to take care of it. I was like, who is this crime-fighting couple? They're just rich. They're totally into each other. You got to watch that show to get a little shot of what the 70s and 80s was all about. I was one of my favorite quarantine activities was watching Love Boat. And I love that I've turned Dr. Drew onto Love Boat, because what he doesn't understand is that Dr. Adam Bricker, the ship's doctor, was nailing all of the passengers on the ship.
He was in the best position.
He was heralded as a hero for having sex with the passengers.
You can do the time. The time can do you, man.
That's right. All right, good. Clay Aiken is on hold, so let me just hit Shady Rays here. High-quality shades for far less and than all those expensive brands, which are really expensive. Not the big corporation that overcharges. Premium polarized shades built for the outdoors and backed for life. One of the best warranties in the industry. Replacements if it's lost or broken for any reason, and lifetime craftsmanship warranty as well. And most of the Shady Rays start at just $48. I have the best story about these sunglasses in terms of like the testimonial. I told you guys last weekend I took Sunny to PCH, and those of you who have been following it know that there's all this algae in the water that's making all this
bioluminescence.
But when you're on top of PCH and you're coming down that long hill and you're just looking to the left and you're looking at the water, you can see all the algae. And Sonny is wearing the Shady Rays. He's not a sunglasses guy, but I said, try these on before we left the house, and he's wearing them the whole time. He looks like Baby Driver with those things. And he come over the hill and he goes, oh, look at all the algae. That's amazing. And then at some point he took the Shady Rays off, like just looked as like, what would it look like that? And then he looked and he goes, you can't see it when you take the sunglasses off. Wow. And then he goes, you put it on and it's so defined, you know? And I was like, good. I'm using that in the spot. Plus, by the way, so most of them start at $48 and everyone loves theirs. I wear mine as well. And They'll also provide 10 meals to fight hunger in America with every order. Shady Rays, right, Dawson?
Exclusively for our listeners, they gave us the best deal they have to offer. This is a Black Friday level deal. Use code Corolla for 50% off two or more pairs at ShadyRays.com. Buy one, get one free. You can get two pairs of shades for $48. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com, where you can find all their newest and best shades.
All right, we'll take a quick break. One of my favorites, Clay Aiken, is up next.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from HDS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Corolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a free chapter from the upcoming I'm Your Emotional Support Animal audiobook, narrated by the Ace Man himself, two bottles of Poopery toilet spray to save your family from the smells of your COVID diet, a key locator, so that when you're ready to finally go outside and lose your keys, you'll still be able to find them easily. A sleeping mask, so you can catch some Z's just like Adam. The entire audiobook for fan favorite AJ Benza's autobiography, 74 and Sunny. God, does this guy have stories. And of course, a bottle of your choosing. We know times are tough, but we at Corolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo. Even people who disagree on everything agree on Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. Tim Allen says, Adam has written a funny, insightful book with a powerful message a bunch of people will manage to be offended by without reading it. Pre-order I'm Your Emotional Support Animal now at AdamCarolla.com.
Clay Aiken, one of my favorites, is on with us, his podcast, How the Heck Are We Going to Get Along? I did this show a few weeks. I guess it was episode three. Been about a month or something. New episodes every Thursday on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Clay, good to speak to you.
Likewise. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have, as you know, so much respect for you and your ability. I don't
that,
know what
that makes me question your judgment, but I appreciate it.
Oh, he's a fan.
I am so into a motor. I love a motor in people. It's so attractive to me, like people that just hustle. And Clay has that motor to him. And I don't know why it's so attractive to me. Maybe because I come from a bunch of ice sculptures for parents, that there's something about that motor. You know, watching my parents melt for 50 years didn't seem like a good plan, but Clay and the motor. But Clay, where did you get the motor?
I don't know. I'm thinking myself, I have challenged all the time now because I'm trying my best to raise a kid, an 11-year-old. And I think sometimes that some of the things that I hated about my parents in hindsight, I have to appreciate, right? You know, they weren't that easy on me, and I had to figure a lot of stuff out on my own. So I think I probably got a little bit of it from being forced to problem solve by myself when I was older, when I was younger.
What kind of parents did you have? I know you had a stepdad who kind of talked about trying to work the gay out of you, but
That wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but and it did not work either. But in hindsight, even though I think his motivation was not great in that regard, I have come to recognize that, appreciate the fact that I'm right now in the middle of, I've kind of given up a little bit, but of renovating a house. I got a place in Raleigh to use when I'm not in New York, and thought I'd get something that was in good shape structurally, but cosmetically was a hot mess. And I decided I'd do a lot of it myself. So, basic rewiring of light sockets and that kind of stuff I can do on my own. I ripped the deck out. I did that by myself. And some of these things that I can do by myself, I wouldn't have been able to do if he hadn't tried to turn me straight.
Was that your interpretation of it, or did he actually make that proclamation?
Well, he died before I came out to myself, so he didn't make the proclamation. Although I think when, you know, in the early 90s and the late 80s, sissy was probably used a few times. So I think he probably knew. I mean, it is my interpretation of it, right? I mean, he didn't know from me, at least, that I was gay. But I look back at it, and I think he knew before I did. He definitely knew that unlike my brothers, his sons, I was definitely not as tough as they were.
Yeah, well, tougher than Lou Ferrigno, yeah. As cited at the top of the show. It's always I marvel at how delicate his wiring was.
Right? Well, you know, there's a certain, I did learn a little bit after that. I told myself after that whole experience that there were certain things that I wanted to make sure I never did in this world. And being a certain age and still carrying 8x10 glossies of myself from 40 years prior was one of the things that I did not want to do when Brian, I got to be 70.
Brian, you've been making noises. I just
had this notion, Clay, you know about this obviously more than I do, but I had this notion, and maybe you could tell me if I'm right or wrong, but the idea that, like, as a kid, you can be not traditionally tough. You could be into music as opposed to sports. But one of the toughest things anyone will ever go through is being an out gay person in America, especially in the South. You know what I mean? Like, it would strike me that you'd have to be incredibly tough to be an out gay person, and especially in parts of the country that aren't as tolerant about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the, Adam and I don't agree on a lot of stuff, but this is one thing that I do agree with you on a lot, Adam, and that is that I think in general, society has gotten weaker and more easily offended by things. I look at stuff now and think, God, why is it that I'm not bothered by some of the, like, seeing stuff all about me on Twitter or reading something, someone commenting something really nasty on an Instagram post. Why am I not bothered? Because everybody else I know seems to just really get their pants in a wad every time someone looks at them cross-eyed. And I don't know if it had anything to do with being out and gay or not, because I also think that I probably, you know, I had a cloak of celebrity on me, and I have to admit that I had some celebrity privilege, if you want to call it that, because I was out and gay and in a medium-sized city where people all knew who I was or who know who I am, and probably were more interested in kind of starstruck by meeting someone they'd seen on TV, and they weren't willing to be as homophobic to
my face.
More
excited about a famous person than a gay person.
Yeah, probably. You know, I used to, when I ran for Congress, I used to say you can only be one hyphenate. You're either going to be the black candidate, the Muslim candidate, the gay candidate. I was the Hollywood celebrity candidate, and that kind of made the gay thing be the secondary piece of it. And so I think maybe I'm just oblivious to it. Maybe people are homophobic around me all the time and I'm just oblivious to it, but there are too many other things in life to be upset about than to be upset that someone calls you gay or gives you shit for that, you know?
Well, I completely concur. And, you know, we were talking about, I think, earlier in the week, but, like, being bullied is sort of a choice. You don't have to be a victim. You can have things done to you. You can have things said about you. People can put their hands on you. I grew up in that world, but I never thought of myself as a victim. And I never thought of them as bullies. I thought of them as assholes who were trying to do things to me that I didn't want them to do. But I never thought they were bullies, because if they're bullies, then that makes me bullied.
Right. And being offended,
I never wanted to think of it that way.
And being offended is a choice too. You know,
yeah.
People get offended by things. And I say to, I mean, again, I'm probably going to, I will certainly screw them up at some point, but I try with, if I haven't already, but I try with my, even with my son to say, you don't need to be upset by something somebody says. That's your choice. And there's also, to some degree, and this is probably a trait I got from my mother and her family, just not giving anyone control over you. When you let someone upset you, they have control. And I refuse to give anybody control over me. So I'm not going to be offended by something you say. And I just think that people have forgotten that's a choice on your part. No one can offend you without your permission.
Well, and to your point, there's nothing a bully hates more than not getting a reaction.
No, reaction.
It's it's incendiary to see someone just look back at you and smile when you're trying to upset them.
Right. Well, that's, and that is something that we have to get to a certain age before we realize, because yeah. Lord knows, I'm sure I was given that exact mm-hmm. advice when I was in middle school, and I definitely did not have the wisdom then to listen to what my parents were, my mother was telling me. But
when did you come out? What was your age?
Idle. I didn't know for sure myself until I was 24. I was on Idol. And I think all these, I look back, and in North Carolina in the early 90s, you were either really flamboyantly gay or you were closeted, you know? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know any gay people when I was growing up. The only gay people who I knew were the dance teacher at my high school. And I didn't even know what that meant. And that was, I don't think people understood what gay was. Will and Grace hadn't come on yet. I didn't know what it was. So it wasn't until I was in probably in college that I knew what that meant. And then it wasn't until I was in LA for Idol that I met other, I mean, listen, I'm nobody's lumberjack. I get that. But I also was not as affected as I think some other folks I saw on TV might've been. So I didn't realize till I got to LA and was doing Idol that, oh, whoa. Wait, he's gay and he's gay? Oh, then maybe I am gay. I thought I was bisexual. Every self-respecting gay Southerner has been bisexual at some point. They had to do that halfway house.
Yeah. I used to say, I don't know why, but on Loveline, I used to say bisexual is gay with a publicist. Like, someone is making a case where, like, no, he's bi. Come on.
Or it's just not the gateway. It's just the gateway drug.
Sure.
Yeah. Before you get, although I used to say that all the time too, but I think I have in recent years realized, listen, if you can be born predisposed to being attracted to women and I can be born predisposed to being attracted to men, why can't someone be born predisposed attracted to both? So I certainly think that it's a valid sexual orientation for people, but it's definitely not for me, even though I've tried to pretend it was.
What's your status right now? Are you married? Do you have a partner?
Quarantined.
By yourself.
No, my son's here and he goes back and forth between here and his mother's house. She lives down the street, but no, it's just me, single, lonely, die alone. I'm a hermit, that's fine.
Wait, how's that work?
What work?
Your child is 11. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do the math. You're 41.
She and I are very good friends. We were friends. We worked together. She wanted kids. I wanted kids. No romantic stuff at all.
Right.
Okay. We did IVF and we co-parent and she lives not far away. And in the quarantine, it's our opportunity to see my mother two times a week. We meet in her backyard do a 6 foot apart social gathering of just the small family. And then he goes back and forth.
My theory on that is that he might be the most well-adjusted child on the planet, just given those stats. Two loving parents with no conflict who came together because they're friends and truly wanted this boy here, and conflict-free best friends.
From your mouth to God's ear, girl. I hope he is. But he's, you know, we're getting to it. I don't talk about him usually in public because I figure I'll let him have a private life, but I'll say this, being a dad is harder when the child is a certain age than it is when they're younger. I'll say that much. It's a challenge for me.
Well, I can tell you that I'm starting to divide the world into two categories, and some people are reasonable and easy, and some people are just difficult. Difficult adults, difficult kids, difficult neighbors, difficult bosses, difficult employees. And right. If difficult partners, husbands, wives, like if you are dealing
with talking.
That's my daughter. If you are dealing with a difficult person, it is fucking difficult. And my son is just not difficult. He's kind of wired like a lab. Now that's all wiring. It's not none of us. It's all nature. I don't think any of it's nurture, but he's easy. So it's like, if you say to him, you know, if he goes, can we go out to McDonald's tonight? And you go, not tonight, but we'll go tomorrow. He'll go, okay. And he'll just walk in the house. If you do that with my daughter, it's a battle and you got to get into it. She's difficult. He isn't difficult, but I'm now starting to really think about adults. Think about like the difficult adults in your life, or think about the difficult neighbors you had, or the difficult, whatever, managers, co co-work, colleagues, whatever it is. Like, and the one thing about being difficult is difficult people don't know they're difficult. That's the whole thing. Now, if you put two of them together, then they find out because they end up hating each other's guts, which is always my favorite. Because then the one, they'll each come to you individually and go, God, so-and-so is such a bitch, you know? And it's like, no, you're both bad.
Okay, you don't want to be that you don't want to be that person who they both come to.
Right.
Because then they eventually go back to each other and talk shit about you because you were honest with them, God forbid.
So how much has this impacted your business, touring, playing, performing?
Well, I mean, I think it's completely shut down for everybody, right?
I guess what I'm saying is obviously it's completely shut you down, but how many dates were you doing?
Well, I had stopped really singing publicly a lot after I... Well, I mean, I did a tour after we did Apprentice, and then two, and then after I ran for Congress, I stopped touring in general and started just doing, you know, talking as if the people wanted to hear my opinion. And so I did more of that, and I still did probably 4 or 5 private events a year, and that's it. I did a Broadway show with Ruben in 2018. That was a opportunity he and I got to do together, and we did that. But outside of that, I've really just done private events, and obviously those are all canceled right now too. So
what is the political plan versus the musical plan?
Well, I don't know. I didn't stop performing so that I could stay in politics. I stopped because I just realized there's an expiration date on most singers, right? And I wanted to, unlike some people who we might have been on a TV show with, I wanted to know when my expiration, I wanted to choose it instead of pretend that it had not passed.
I have to think. Was Tony Bennett? No. Well, let's drill down
There are plenty of people who don't really realize when the moment is gone, is past for them. And I don't know that it's completely past for me. I still can sing here and there. I can still do Broadway stuff, but it is past for me to be on the radio. I'm 41 years old. I'm not going to be on top 40 radio anymore. That's over. That was 16, 17 years ago. So I started deciding to sing and perform in ways that made more sense for a 41-year-old. That's why Ruben and I did Broadway. That's why I've done private events. So I'm not trying to get on top 40 radio anymore, because I think it's like when you were a kid and your parents used the cool words and it just didn't sound right coming out of their mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are plenty of people, I don't have to name names, but there are plenty of people who don't realize that they don't need to be carrying around 8x10s of themselves anymore. You know what I mean? And so part of my reason,
he sung like a siren. He was a great vocalist.
So politics, I don't know. I don't know if I have the patience for, I don't think I could get through a primary anymore nowadays anyway. I think I would probably be run out of my own party for not being angry enough.
Clay, it sounds like suicide is pretty much the next stop for you.
That's all you got left.
You know, waking up can be so difficult these days, being 41 years old, sitting up, getting out of bed, getting dressed.
I'm not down on myself. I'm being reasonable about the singing thing. I still perform. But politics, yes. Isn't that depressing for everybody?
Oh, yeah. Well, I found doing your show quite, delightful.
Yeah, but you know what? You did it the first week that we had to quarantine. You did the first week that we had to got rid of the studio audience, and people were in that week on the show much more cautiously optimistic about the country not being so divisive, and everybody wanted to kind of agree. Boy, that shit went out the window in 2 weeks.
Really?
And people are, I mean, I think that's what scares me more than anything. It's not that I, not policy. It's the fact that you, like what Chris Christie came out today and said and made a comment about, we need to open it up, we need to open the economy up, and we have to recognize that people are going to die. Well, Lord, he got trashed from hell for that, right? And I think to myself, but did he get trashed because it's a bad idea, it's the wrong idea, or did he get trashed because he happened to say something close to what Trump said, and now Democrats are going to disagree with that for that reason? And I think that we've gotten to a place where you just disagree with whoever is on the other, in the other party, whether they make a reasonable suggestion or not, you know? And I don't know if I have the bandwidth or the patience to scream and shout at, you know what, and be offended. I don't have the, I'm not going to choose to be offended just because it's expedient to do so.
Now I agree. And it's bizarre that adults, and when I say adults, I don't mean 37-year-olds. I mean, 75-year-olds are carrying on this way, which it seemed nearly impossible when I was a kid, you know, seeing people of this age having those kinds of back and forth. But, you know, it's also just interesting. I was watching Super Bowl III on the NFL Network. They just put it on, and watching, first off, just the halftime show from Super Bowl III, like
marching band, cheerleaders.
There's like a giant wedding cake that was made of, you know, cardboard being pushed down the middle of the field, and comically, people in football outfits with like their legs sticking out was literally like shaped as a football, and one of them like fell over, and then the other one fell over. Like
it was like a Clay Aiken concert to me.
It was a hot mess. But they'd show the crowd, and almost every guy was wearing a tie and a blazer, like at, and that was in Miami. That was the Colts. Jets game, right, in Miami. So here we are in Miami, you know, at a 2 o'clock kickoff, sun's overhead, and all these guys are wearing jackets and ties. And I thought, this is a little bit different now.
Yeah, and now they all have the hats on with the beer cans in them, right?
That's right, right. And by the way, good luck finding a fat guy in that crowd either. They're all went like 155 pounds, but we are at a new place. And we are going to have to sort of learn to keep walking, as Clay said, which is not stopping and listening every time somebody throws something out, good or bad. Like we're just going to have to do more of that. And it's hard to convince people to do more of that because it's alluring. The siren song of the phone, of getting back on the phone to seeing if someone said something about you or responded or something. But we're just going to have to do that because I know we're not wired for this. It's clear we're not wired for this.
To your point, a big clickbait headline that Clay, you yourself may have even, you know, had your name in there before. A big trending thing is, see how this celebrity clapped back at a troll. And it's like, why do I have to watch this exchange of somebody being mean to a celebrity and then the celebrity shitting on the person? But that is such a major clickbait headline for, I don't know, the last however many years.
Listen, clickbait is it, right? It's all clickbait.
Right.
There's not, and unfortunately, we're lazy. We don't click on it. Like we read the headline and right. Then that's it. That's the truth, right? We don't even click on it. I can't tell you how many people have, and so they have to make the headlines more salacious. Otherwise we won't click on them. And then they make it salacious. It says something horrible. It's not exactly the truth. You have to read the story to get the truth, but it doesn't matter because if the headline says something, you know, that's all the people are going to share with their friends. So. Yeah. It's a laziness, and I think that that's disappointing. Do you think it's going to change? I mean, I've read some articles with clickbait headlines, but who believe that after this correction of people's attitudes, we might take things more seriously because of this virus. And I don't know if I believe it. I really don't know if I do.
I think my feeling is, everyone is going to be a little bit callous and a little bit numb. And so when you hear a headline that's meant to elicit a reaction, you're going to have less of a reaction, you know,
your body builds
up a tolerance for it. Like you do with Percocet, you know, like the guys, I'm not really kidding. Like we're trying to get, we are as human beings, basically trying to live in homeostasis, you know, just along right in the middle somewhere. And I always learned this from Dr. Drew when he would say, oh, I have patients that take 90 Vicodin a day. And I would always go, 90 a day? Oh, yeah.
Still alive.
And they would work and stuff, you know, and I'd go, how do you do it? And he'd be like, you start with two a day. And then two-a-day doesn't do anything. That just two-a-day makes you even.
Well, that's why we're are not moved by any of the videos or headlines or anything we see, because we've gaslighted ourselves
right
really to it. But so let me, you're in LA, you're all in the LA area, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Correct.
And so I do wonder sometimes if there's a big difference, because if I was in New York during this, I would probably be freaked out. I don't know how the atmosphere is in LA around this virus and whether there's a big noticeable difference. Obviously LA is always jam-packed with traffic, so I imagine it's visibly different now. Like, it's certainly visibly different in New York, but in places like Raleigh or places in other parts of the middle of the country, I don't know that there's been as much of a visible change. I mean, my neighborhood's always quiet. It's going to always be quiet. I'm far away. So I don't know if people are taking it as seriously in these areas because we're not seeing the, you know, the apocalyptic changes. And so that's why I'm not sure that it's going to change anybody's attitudes, because people really aren't, I don't know that life is that much different for folks in these areas.
I think in rural areas, definitely less impacted, you know, from a death standpoint, but also just from a lifestyle standpoint. And one byproduct of this is the future has always been a kind of a Blade Runner. Everyone lives on top of each other and we all pile into these mass shuttles and nobody has a car and nobody has a yard. And this is kind of the future. I feel like this may impact that. Like,
yeah.
I feel like people that are thinking of moving into a high rise in Chicago or moving into Manhattan or Boston are going to go, you know what, let's get a place on half an acre with a little bit of room to
exactly
stretch out.
Exactly what I was saying. I was talking to some of my family about that the other day, that in the 70s and 80s, especially here in the South, there was a lot of what they called white flight of people leaving the cities. People who lived in the cities, they all moved out to the suburbs. And recently in places like Raleigh and Charlotte and cities in the South, especially, there's been this draw for people to come and live back downtown. And I have a feeling that shit's mm-hmm. over, because you know, living in an apartment building, you think about all the germs you're sharing with people all of a sudden.
It might be nice if the byproduct was people are planting more gardens and being a little more self-reliant and preparing a little bit and working on their health and immune system. Like, there can be a bunch of positive shit that comes from
this. Damn good for the home value. I told you I'm renovating this house, trying to flip it. I got 2 acres. Anybody wants to get away from the germs, you call me up.
you have any home improvement questions you'd like me to answer?
You're definitely the one to know. I'm really ready to screw it up on my own, and I'm afraid if I ask you, you'll tell me how to do it right, and then I'll have to really work harder. So I don't want to do that.
All right, well, shall we take a quick break and come back and do some news with Clay Aiken? That sound good, everybody? All right, let's do that. Let's take a quick break, come back. Gene will do the news. Clay will hang out. We'll do that right after this.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.